So last week we began a very short series about belonging, and we started with the idea that we belong to God. I hope you can say yes, I know that. But I also know that sometimes there's challenges in that, or even kind of experiences that make you kind of wonder, is that really true? Really? My response is, heck yes, but I know it's hard sometimes. This week, I want to talk to you about the connections that we have with each other. And, you know, we see this modeled in some ways with the scriptures. I mean, at one point, Jesus is questioned about how is it that we live, and he says, what do the scriptures say? And the person that's asking the question says, you know, what I read is that we're supposed to love God with all of our heart, mind, soul, strength, everything we have, and our neighbor as ourself, all right? So that's, you know, you could think of it like vertically and horizontally. So, like, certainly with God, you know, if God is in heavens above, although that's a metaphor, but, you know, if that is the case, then also we have the horizontal love to kind of deal with as well. So that, you know, even though, like I was telling the young people here, even though we might be different, there are things that bind us together. We are interconnected. And that's really kind of countercultural a bit in some Western, particularly, you know, within the United States. We're kind of like, pull yourself by your own bootstraps. You ever do that? Anybody have bootstraps in their possession? Right. But you know, this whole, like, I will take care of myself. I got it. This is me, right? And then experience will kind of shake that, of course. And we have to kind of navigate, like, what is our agency and what is our interconnectedness? But I want to tell you, we're interconnected. Nature is interconnected. Life, you know, the scripture that we just heard read, you know, talks about the different parts of the body, but they're all interconnected. Try living without a digestive system. All right. Try living without a heart or a liver. You can get by with one kidney, but it's not easy. We're interconnected. So I have a couple of stories that I wanted to come and share with you about this, and we'll see if I have time for both of them, okay? So if someone needs to call time, then I'll ignore you, but we'll see. I was sitting in the driver's seat behind a Jeep Cherokee. This was the first car that I ever bought on my own, right? And I'm like, ooh, man, check me out. And I'm in my late 20s, and, you know, had been the benefactor of lots of hand-me-down cars for a long time, which is great. Love that. Thank you, Mom and Dad and other people that have kind of made that happen. So, but I, you know, I grew up at some point, and I started buying my own cars, and I'm sitting in this car. I've had it about a year and a half or so, and it's pretty good day. It was in February, and I, you know, if you can imagine the dashboard of the car, there's the wheel, of course, and then on the radio, I'm a classical music. I like lots of music, but I had Mozart on the radio. That was playing, and the engine was running and sounded okay. There were no check engine lights or warning lights whatsoever on that, so I was feeling okay, you know, things were, you know, kind of as they should be, except I'm hanging upside down by my seatbelt. Okay? So that morning, I hopped in the car, I went and got gas and coffee, all right? And I knew that the weather was rough, so I figured I'll just take it easy and I'll go into the office. I should not have been, because it had rained and snowed and sleeted, kind of all in the sort of same zone. So there was lots and lots of ice and junk on the road. Not the thing to mess with, but I'm, you know, not always that smart. So I hop in the car, full of gas, full of caffeine, or at least I'm going to be, and I am driving back the other direction from my house. I'm within a half mile of my house. And I started to lose control. There's ways to kind of compensate when you're driving, but you can only go so far with those compensations. So I was kind of trying to compensate, and I lost more control and more control and more control. And then finally, before I got back control of the car, I was, pointed in the wrong direction, 180 degrees I'd made it. There was a car coming towards me, and I was trying to not hit that car. And I, was trying to compensate for all that. And in the midst of all, the car started to leave the road, right? Momentum started kind of kicking in. Debris built up around the wheels. This is in the country. And I flipped over. And I'm so glad I flipped over where I did. Because if I had gone, just a few hundred yards further down the road, I would have flipped over and been in water, right? Those kind of accidents where a car flips over are relatively rare. They occur about 4 or 5% of the time, but they account for, when they actually do occur, they account for about 25% of the fatalities. So it's relatively rare, but really dangerous. All right. So I'm hanging upside down from my seatbelt. I don't know if I'm triggering anybody. I'm sorry if I am. We can talk about this. But it's not, normal, right? The thing that I thought when I'm hanging there and I realized what had happened, my first thought was, literally, this is not good. That's the basic level at which I think, oh, this isn't good. And I realized just how not good it was, because I realized that this had happened, that my motor was still running, my engine was still running, and I have seen every bad episode of Chips and all these TV shows. Some of y'all know what I'm talking about, right? So I just knew I was on fire. And that it would explode. And there was a, possibility of that. And I couldn't really tell anything. I couldn't smell anything except for coffee, because coffee was all over my roof. So I'm holding on, and I'm thinking, all right, well, this is not good. So I turned the engine off, had the wherewithal to think about that, turned off the music, turned off Mozart, which was probably, an okay thing to do. And then I started trying to get out and realized I'm going nowhere. Right, because the way that those seatbelts were made at the time, they're really, really weight dependent, and you have, it is really difficult to just kind of pop out of that thing for a reason, right? And by the way, I'm very, very glad that I had my seatbelt on, because if I had not, and when I was younger, I was kind of like off and on, I wore it for fashion. Whatever. You remember those days, right? You remember those days before it was a mandatory law? It was like, okay, whatever. So glad I had that on, because if I had not been wearing my seatbelt, I would have had a immediate death or a significant spinal column or brain injury that would have significantly changed my life. But instead, I'm just hanging there thinking, well, this is not good. What do I do? So I'm hanging there, and I'm thinking, what to do? And I start to think about, well, I could blow up here, so I might have survived this, but I'm not going to survive that. And all this panic, what am I going to do? How am I going to take care of this? And I was really not in a place to take care of myself. Later, I learned that you can position yourself in just the right way and kind of like start slithering around through and push and pull and all that kind of stuff. But they didn't cover that in driver's ed in high school, okay? So, none of that was thinking. So I am petrified and alone. Now, As I started to spin, I mentioned to you that there was a car that was coming towards me that I was worried about hitting, and I missed that car. And, you know, the guy that was driving the car could have gone like, yeah, crazy guy, and just kind of blown on by, right? And people do that. It's like, what's wrong with that guy? What the heck? And kept on going, right? As it turns out, he was a lovely man who was trying to get his wife to a hospital. They were late for surgery. Okay. She had an important surgery that morning in Richmond, and which was about an hour away. And so they were trying to really kind of like make their way to that. But instead, he pulled over and he got out. And the next thing I know, there is this beautiful soul who is beside the car door yelling at me. And I thought, maybe he's mad. He wasn't mad. Yelling, are you okay, are you okay, are you okay? And was able to get the door open. And, you know, if I'd been able to kind of get out of my seat, I still would have had trouble with the door. But he got this door because of debris all next to it. And he got that, he pulled that door open in an amazing way. And he kind of lifted me a little bit and got that seatbelt to release me, and I was free. I needed someone to do something for me that I could not do myself. My life was interconnected with his. His life was interconnected with mine. Now, if I had seen him normally, I don't know if I would have. You know, at the time, I think I was a relatively gentle person, but I don't know. You know, would I even noticed him? Would I have, you know, had a realization of that interconnection between his life and mine? One of the things I noticed about him is that he wasn't dressed the best, and he looked like he was, you know, just kind of like hardworking blue collar kind of guy. And at the time, that's folks that were not really close in on my circle. He had very yellow eyes, which made me worry about his liver. And, you know, what health conditions he might be kind of, you know, does he have hepatitis? Went through my head. The man's pulling me out of a vehicle, and I'm worried about hepatitis. Which goes to show your pastor's kind of stupid sometimes. Yet, we're connected. I called him later. I exchanged information with him, and I called him later, and I thanked him. And I had all the intention of kind of coming back through and sort of like, and I checked on his wife. The surgery, they made it for surgery. But, you know, as is with life, we disconnected, right? I owe my life to that fellow, I know. We need each other. Even with those things that would seem to separate us from each other, like, you know, what our socioeconomic status is. By the way, this was a beautiful African-American man. What a race would be sometimes is how we kind of draw those lines. Who we think of as acceptable or not. Who we think of as allies or not. Well, he believes the same way I do. We see eye to eye on this. We are part of the gang, right? We listen to the same news outlet together. We go to the same store. I'll never go to that store, but, you know, down here at the cool store. And there's different, you know, versions of that. You can just fill in the blank in that. This person believes this about LGBTQ folks. This person has a completely different feeling about that. But somebody's got to be right. Really? And how they do that is much more complicated than we have time for. I don't like nuance. Just give it to me straight. Just give me a black and white kind of thing about how I should be and who we are as people, right? No. I watched more than one church get into fights over things. Sometimes they fight over the color of carpet. I'm not making that up. I've watched churches get into actual conflict with each other that led to litigation. And, you know, just like lots of horrible, broken people. But for some reason, they were still coming to church. Which goes to say, there must be a God, right? We need each other. Romans said, outdo each other in giving honor to the other person. Outdo each other. If you're going to be ambitious, if you're going to be a person who is like, I'm going to win this, then win how good you are to the other people in your life, whether you know the connection or not. Anybody think this is easy? Not a hand up in the room. Come on, there's got to be somebody. There's somebody in the back, but he doesn't know what I'm talking about, so that's okay. We don't believe him. No, I'm kidding. We need each other. Now, there's lots of things I can also tell you about this. I'll come back and tell you some more. I got to one story. Maybe I'll tell the other story very soon. But my invitation to you is to consider this. Who is it that has pulled you out of a car that you're thinking is going to blow up? Or some version thereof? It may have been, you know, a really kind of explicit that, or it may have been very subtle. It may have been like a phone call well placed at the right time. Or it may have been, you know, buying somebody lunch. Or it may have been, you know, not giving somebody bad advice, but just listening to them. Or maybe there was, you know, there's lots of different ways to do this love, right? And so who is it that has outdone you in honoring you, right? Loving you. And the second assignment is, who is it that you need to be in relationship with in a very concrete, specific way? There are people in your life that you may not know. You with me? There are people in your life that you may not even know that you can be that presence for. It's the presence of God. It's also the presence of showing up and loving. That's the invitation to you, and I give that to you in the name of the Father and the Son, the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm.